Am I on?
Okay. Am I on? Is this microphone on? Okay. Good morning, everybody. I'd like to call this meeting to order, and I'd like to welcome the public. I'd like to request at this time everybody turn their phones off, either silent or off, during the course of the meeting. And the purpose of this meeting is for the regional board members to obtain testimony and information from concerned and affected parties within the Colorado River Basin on water quality issues. We welcome hearing from the public at this meeting. We request that any person wishing to speak could fill out one of these speaker request cards for those items that are listed on the agenda today, and you can make your comment at that time during the item as we're considering the item. If you wish to speak on any item not on the agenda today, you may do so at the public forum, and comments will generally be limited to 3 minutes. So we will start the meeting with roll call, please. Oh, there you are, over there, Hilda.
Pledge of allegiance.
Well, I'll get there. My mine's different. Come on.
Sorry. Hey, why is yours different?
Because I'm... She's
important.
Sorry, go ahead.
Buford Kreitz.
Present.
Tom Davis.
Here.
Ed Music.
Here.
Jane Powell.
Present.
Nancy Wright.
Here.
Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you. Anybody here from the city of Brawley? I would like to thank the city of Brawley, even though nobody's here, but I'd like to thank them for the use of their chambers and the hospitality they've shown us, so thank you. We also like to mention that we do have a webcast going on here. The meeting is being webcast today, that all speakers and board members will be broadcasted via microphone during the duration of this meeting. So, Pledge of Allegiance. Please stand.
Go ahead,
Beaver.
Pledge of Allegiance.
Hey, I do have a speaker's card for the public forum. Brea Mohammed.
Good morning. My name is Brea Mohammed. I'm the Executive Director of Imperial County Farm Bureau. Thank you, Chair Wright and the Board, for allowing me the opportunity to speak real quickly. As you know, Imperial Irrigation District and Imperial County Farm Bureau have a joint coalition that has successfully implemented the requirements of the conditional waiver that the Board has set in place for us, as well as a conditional prohibition before that. Today, I have with me part of the team that makes our coalition so successful. Rachel Magos, C. Charlton, and Al Kalin. We've been following the board's actions on the general orders for Palo Verde and Bard, and we are aware that the Imperial Valley will be up for review after Coachella. While we have not yet started working with staff on that order, we wanted to come before your board today to proactively express our position. Imperial Valley is a uniquely situated area that has unique circumstances that will make applying the requirements from the East San Joaquin General Order difficult and unnecessary to implement. While the East San Joaquin Order was approved to protect groundwater in the area, Imperial Valley has no beneficial uses for our groundwater. This is due to the fact that the quality of the groundwater has simply always been poor because of its high salinity. This, along with other reasons that are outlined in the letter that we have for you today, is why we would like to work with you and your staff on an exemption for the Imperial Valley for the nitrate monitoring and reporting in that presidential order. We would like to invite you, your board, and your staff for a tour of our agricultural fields and conveyance system to better understand the Imperial Valley's unique circumstances. Here, we could further discuss irrigation and farm management practices, Imperial Valley's Colorado River Water Resources and Conservation Programs, and the Coalition's collaborative success. Thank you for your time today. We look forward to working with you further, and we hope to see you back down here to the Imperial Valley for a tour soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Brea. That would be very interesting. I'd like to do that.
Thank you. And we do have the copies of the letter for the public in case they wanted a copy. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else like to speak at the public forum part of the meeting? Okay, hearing none, go on to the minutes of June 13th, 2019.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We have no uncontested items on today's agenda. So we'll go to item two. I would now like to open the public hearing to consider the general waste discharge requirements for discharges of waste for irrigated agricultural lands for dischargers that are members of a coalition group in Bard Valley, Imperial County. Regional Board staff will give a presentation on the key permit provisions and response to the comments. There will also be opportunity for the members of the public to ask questions, make comments, and followed by staff presentation. I will now administer the oath. This will require an oath. Anybody who thinks they are going to speak, even if you don't think at this moment, but there might be something you want to say, please stand to take the oath of the oath right now. Okay. You know, I always feel weird sitting down, you guys all standing up. So I'm going to stand up, too. Okay. Do you swear to affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under penalty of perjury? Thank you. And please make sure that you state your that you've taken the pledge, your name, your affiliation, and that you've taken the pledge when you come up to speak. Before we begin, I'd like to ask any of the board members if they've had any ex parte communications about this particular subject. Okay,
no.
Hearing none, we will start with the past staff presentation. Logan, Rob, did I say that right? Rob? Logan? He's from, Rob, he's from the regional board. And have you taken the oath?
He have. He stood up and took it.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the board. My name is Logan Robb, and I'm an environmental scientist at the Regional Water Board, and I have taken the oath.
Thank you.
Today I'm here to present to you information on the proposed general waste discharge requirements for discharges of waste from irrigated agricultural lands for dischargers that are members of a coalition group in Bard Valley, which I'm simply going to refer to as Bard Ag Order. In my talk, I will discuss our regulatory authority for regulating agricultural discharges of waste and applicable laws and policies, discuss the expired Bard Ag waiver, the proposed Bard Ag order and order requirements. I will also describe the public's participation, discuss the main comments received and our responses, and I will conclude with a summary and staff's recommendation. Discharges from irrigated agricultural lands may carry wastes that can affect the quality of the waters of the state. The Regional and State Water Board are charged with preserving and protecting the quality of state's waters to the maximum benefit of the people, and this is accomplished in part through the issuance and enforcement of waste discharge requirements. In California, the regulations for controlling agricultural discharges of waste into state waters are found in the California Water Code and in state policies and mandates adopted in agreement with those codes. Important water code sections include Section 13263, which describes waste discharge requirement provisions, Section 13269, which describes waiver provisions, and Section 13267, which describes monitoring and reporting provisions. Important state policies include the anti-degradation policy and the non-point source policy. And important new mandates are found in the Presidential State Water Board Order for the Eastern San Joaquin Watershed, which was adopted last year. One state policy that the Bard Ag Order needs to comply with is the State Water Board's non-point source policy, which is the state's plan for controlling wastes from diffuse landscape-type discharges like agricultural discharges. The policy requires or relies on planning for and implementing management practices, monitoring and reporting, assessing reports and monitoring results to measure the effectiveness of management practices, and implementing improved management practices where the practices prove ineffective or additional measures are needed to meet the water quality objectives. The non-point source policy requires setting time schedules and quantifiable milestones to ensure that water quality objectives are met. The BARDAG order must also comply with new requirements stemming from an order adopted by the State Water Board last year. The State Water Board modified an existing ag order for the Eastern San Joaquin Watershed in the Central Valley region, and in the process gave presidential directions for all agricultural regulatory programs statewide to follow. The directions focused mainly on nitrogen management. Others focused on planning, reporting, monitoring, and reinforcing compliance with the State Water Board's non-point source policy. Some but not all of the requirements were already being implemented through our past waivers, like developing farm plans, implementing management practices, monitoring surface water, and education and outreach. The State Board gave agri-regulatory programs 5 years to modify their permits to be consistent with their directions. The concepts for nitrogen management came out of recommendations by an expert agricultural expert panel convened by the State Board, which found that deep percolation of nitrates is universal within irrigated agriculture, and a good regulatory program must actively manage nitrogen in all irrigated areas, not only lands directly above high nitrate aquifers. Nitrogen management involves tracking the amounts of nitrogen applied and the amounts removed, with the goals of estimating the amounts of nitrogen that may potentially be discharged to state waters over time, helping to identify growers who may be over-applying nitrogen, and promoting the efficient use of fertilizer. Total nitrogen applied is determined by summing up the amounts of nitrogen applied from sources including fertilizers, soil amendments, and irrigation water. Total nitrogen removed is determined in part by multiplying a member's crop yield by a crop-specific nitrogen coefficient CN, which represents the amount of nitrogen in the harvested crop. These nitrogen coefficients will be developed by the coalition and approved by the regional water boards. The default reporting is at the field level, but growers may report data for a portion of a field or for multiple fields, provided that the reported area has the same crop type, the same fertilizer inputs, the same irrigation management, and the same management practices. In no case should a reported area exceed a total size of 640 acres. Exemptions for specific planning and reporting requirements are described in the Eastern San Joaquin Order Directions. One exemption that is of interest in BARD is an exemption for growers who can demonstrate that nitrogen applied to farm fields does not percolate below the root zone in amounts that could impact groundwater and does not migrate to surface water. Regardless of whether we grant this exemption, our program should work towards achieving the nitrogen management goals. In our region, agricultural lands are concentrated in BARD, Palo Verde, Coachella, and Imperial Valleys. In total, these areas cover 5% of the region's land. Since 2012, the Regional Water Board has adopted 4 conditional waivers, one for each of these areas. The waiver for Palo Verde expired in 2017 and was replaced with general waste discharge requirements adopted at the May meeting. This is a slide showing the BARD Valley. The area outlined in yellow contains the BARD unit. The BARD unit is a part of the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation's Yuma project, which provides water to irrigate 68,000 acres of agricultural lands near the towns of Yuma, Somerton, and Gadsden in Arizona, and BARD in Winter Haven in California. Land in the unit is heavily farmed, growing leafy greens, winter vegetables, some dates and citrus. It is near, I don't have a pointer, but...
Can you use the cursor on the mouse? If you start moving your mouse.
Oh. It is near California's border with Arizona. It is surrounded by public trust land and tribal land of the Quatsun people. To the north of the unit flows the All-American Canal, and to the south and east, the Colorado River. Area surface waters include the BARD Valley drains, all of which are tributary to the Colorado River. groundwaters underlay the Yuma Valley groundwater basin and are used for drinking. In 2013, this board adopted a conditional waiver to control agricultural waste discharges and discharges from drain maintenance activities in the Bard Valley. The waiver covered farmland in the Bard unit. The covered parties were individual growers and landowners and Bard Water District. The district formed a coalition that represented growers and landowners. All growers and landowners enrolled for coverage under the waiver as a member of the coalition. The Bard Unit Coalition Group submitted their plans and reports on time, monitored surface water, and represented their membership well. Since the waiver expired in 2018, the coalition and coalition members or covered parties have continued to implement the waiver requirements. Staff developed general waste discharge requirements to replace the expired Bard Ag waiver. The Bard Ag order is the second of four planned agricultural general waste discharge requirements. It will be consistent with how we plan to regulate agricultural waste discharges in our region while considering unique local conditions. Order requirements carry forward waiver requirements and incorporate new requirements to comply with state laws and policies. The Bard Ag Order regulates discharges of waste from commercial irrigated agricultural lands in the Bard unit and only applies to dischargers who are members of a coalition. Dischargers who choose not to join a coalition must submit an application to the regional board and their operation will be regulated with an individual waste discharge permit. All irrigated lands that produce agricultural commercial crops will be regulated by the Bard Ag Order for individual waste discharge requirements. These are the waiver requirements under the Bard order for coalition members. Five of these were previously required under the waiver. Two new ones are in bold and are due to new state water board mandates. Submittals of information are similar between the waiver and general order, with the addition of irrigation and nitrogen management plan summary reports and drinking water well monitoring. Developing plans and implementing management practices also relate directly to complying with the non-point source policy. These are some of the coalition requirements under the Bard order. The new requirements are in bold. Here also are requirements that speak to complying with the non-point source policy, specifically monitoring and reporting to provide for a feedback mechanism. These are additional requirements. The new requirements, again, are in bold. In total, there are eight new requirements for the coalition, and they are required either as a result of the state precedential requirements or the non-point source policy. Staff met with the Bard Coalition two times to discuss this order. Staff conducted a public workshop in Blythe on March 15th to inform you and the public about the order and to give an opportunity for stakeholders to comment. Staff also conducted an informational workshop in the Bard Valley the following week. The workshop was well attended. About 26 stakeholders attended for a coalition composed of about 35 members. There were many questions about the previous waiver, the new order, and new reporting requirements. Following the meeting, staff met with a smaller group of coalition members to discuss reporting formats and content and the use of alternative reporting areas, which I will discuss later. The Bard Ag order was available for the public to review and comment during a comment period that lasted from April 24th to May 31st. This included a week extension at your request to allow stakeholders additional time to review and comment on the proposed order. During the public comment period, letters were received from the Bard Coalition, an attorney representing a Bard Valley landowner, and the Imperial County Farm Bureau. We also received oral comments during the board workshop. The comments and our responses are posted on the Regional Board website. The written responses to comments and this presentation cover our responses to issues raised. I will now discuss the main issues raised and our responses in the following slides. The first comment is that the order does not address or account for effects from tribal lands, that the commingling of groundwater and the minor land holdings of the barred unit landowners relative to the overall basin size raises the question of the overall impact of management practices imposed on landowners in barred to the overall water quality in the basin. Our response is that the scope of the barred agricultural general order is focused on the contribution from the permitted dischargers in the barred unit and not holding a grower responsible for discharges from sources outside of the unit. The commingling concept is hypothetical at this point. Until we observe specific water quality problems, it's difficult to say exactly how we will respond to the situation. If monitoring data indicates that a water quality problem does exist, the appropriate response is to develop a water quality restoration plan. One element of that plan is an identification of known or suspected sources. If known or suspected sources are identified from outside of the barred unit, these can be investigated and accounted for. Another comment was a request to incorporate an exemption from nitrogen planning and reporting requirements because the nitrate levels in area waters are significantly below the primary MCL of 10 milligrams per liter, and that a demonstration has been made that nitrogen applied to the fields does not percolate below the root zone in amounts that could impact groundwater and does not migrate to surface water through discharges. In response to this comment, staff have reviewed available water quality data for the barred area and a report submitted on their behalf assessing the current agricultural and environmental situation in the barred water district. Staff reviewed these information and concluded that there is insufficient information at this time to demonstrate that nitrogen applied to the fields does not percolate below the root zone in an amount that could impact groundwater and does not migrate to surface water through discharges, including drainage or runoff. Applicants for the nitrogen management exemption should demonstrate how nitrogen is managed to limit the percolation of applied nitrogen below the root zone in amounts that could impact groundwater or discharge to surface waters, linking the conditions of nitrogen management and the local conditions to water quality. In order to make this demonstration, applicants must collect data and information related to nitrogen management, local conditions, and water quality data that supports their assertion that the criteria for an exemption are met, and submit a request for the exemption with rationale, discussion, and data to the Regional Board staff for consideration. The order does not need to be modified due to this issue because there are provisions in the order regarding nitrogen planning and reporting exemptions. An exemption may be applied for at any time. There were a few comments questioning certain precedential requirements, more specifically that the precedential requirements did not consider local conditions. Reporting at a field level exceeds the scope of the discharge and creates excessive reporting, and disclosing yield data in the INMP reporting degrades the market structure of vegetable production and exposes trade secrets. Our responses are that when developing the order, staff considered the local geology, hydrology, and land use to the extent possible while complying with state regulations and policies. The requirement to submit field-level management practice implementation data is precedential and will enhance the feedback mechanism that the non-point source policy requires.
Thank you.
refer it to the microphone.
Can you hear me? Okay. But the board does have some flexibility with identifying fields, and I will describe this a little bit later. Staff's response regarding the trade secrets is that the State Board has looked into this issue and has rejected the argument that data in the INMP summary report includes trade secrets and deferred to the protections for sensitive business information created by the legislature in the Water Code and the Public Records Act. To alleviate some of the concerns with trade secrets, farm plans and nitrogen management summary reports are to be submitted to the water boards with anonymous identifiers. The farm plans and INMP summary reports themselves are not submitted by the members to the the farm plans and INMP summary reports themselves are submitted by members to the coalition, not to the regional water board. The coalition in turn reports the information in these plans to the regional water board without member identification or location information. To the extent that the regional board may request additional information that may be considered proprietary or trade secrets, for example, through a water quality restoration plan, staff have added a provision to the barred ag order describing the process for submitting claims for exemptions from public reporting. There was a comment that staff indicated alternative reporting areas would be considered for farm plans and INMP reporting. The alternative would allow for annual crop reporting to be summarized by the crop to the ranch level, provided the ranch is less than 640 acres in size. Staff recognizes that the Eastern San Joaquin Order Directions allows some flexibility in field reporting for growers in highly intensive cropping practices, including multiple rotations of different crops in the same location within a single year, unpredictable crop types and harvesting based on rapidly shifting market demand, and variable management practices adjusting to weather and field conditions. The regional water boards have the flexibility to develop alternative reporting areas for these types of growers as long as they determine that the alternative reporting area provides meaningful data and balances the level of detail with a reporting burden similar to the field level reporting approach. In no case should a reported area exceed a total size of 640 acres, and different crop types must always be reported separately, even if they are within the same reporting area, to allow for evaluation of the effectiveness of management practices with regard to each individual crop type grown. Staff have added a new footnote under Section D3C of the proposed barred ag order to provide for alternative reporting areas consistent with the Eastern San Joaquin Order directions. Staff suggests that stakeholders submit a formal written proposal for alternative reporting areas with a reasoned rationale and discussion of the relevant data or information for the regional board staff to review and recommend a decision to the regional board's executive officer. There were a couple of requests to modify the monitoring and reporting requirements for pesticides, more specifically to remove or reduce glyphosate and pendimethalin from surface water monitoring and to remove dimethoate from surface and groundwater monitoring. The coalition provided detailed information regarding pesticide use for the time period 2016 through 2018. When selecting surface and groundwater monitoring pesticides, staff queried the California Department of Pesticide Regulations database reporting pesticide use in the BARD unit, the Department of Pesticide Regulations list of pesticides designated as having the potential to pollute groundwater, and reviewed available water quality data. Based upon use reports from 2012 through 2016, glyphosate or Roundup, pendimethalin and dimethoate were selected because in this time frame they were the most used in the BARD unit. We had little data beyond 2016 regarding their use to base our decisions. Dimethoate was also identified as having the potential to pollute groundwater. In light of the new information provided, staff agreed that the amounts of these pesticides used and the concentrations of glyphosate and pendimethalin found in area surface waters are low and have agreed to remove these pesticides. Staff will work with the BARD Coalition to develop a list of pesticide constituents necessary for an informative, rational pesticide monitoring program. Staff still reserve the right to make the final decisions regarding pesticide constituents to monitor, and that will be subject to the approval of the executive officer. There was a comment that the CEQA negative declaration is 6 years old and it needs to be redone. Our response is that a negative declaration was adopted for the 2013 conditional waiver. The requirements in the general order are substantially similar to the 2013 conditional waiver, with the only differences being the addition of new or revised monitoring and reporting requirements. These new or revised requirements will not result in an adverse physical change to the environment, nor would it require major revisions to the 2013 negative declaration or significant new information, as the term is used in CEQA. Now I will discuss other order revisions in response to other comments received. Staff revised finding one to say that discharges from irrigated agricultural lands may carry waste that can affect the quality of the waters of the state. Provision F7 was revised to clarify that the provision regarding inspection and entry is based on Water Code Section 13267, Subdivision C. This relates to inspection and entry by regional board staff. Again, staff will not enter a property without consent unless staff first obtains a warrant. And a new subdivision was added to provision E6 to allow agricultural dischargers the flexibility to propose the use of new or more effective management practices when a water quality restoration plan is required. I also want to let you know that there is an errata to the order. Staff have extended the deadline for members to submit an electronic notice of intent from 3 months to 5 months. This time extension is found in provision A3B. In summary, the BARD agricultural order is consistent with how we plan to regulate agricultural waste discharges in our region, complies with state water board policies and requirements, and protects surface and groundwater quality. Staff met with the BARD Coalition to discuss the order and conducted workshops in Blythe and in BARD to inform you and the public about the order and its requirements. The public comment period ran from April 24th to May 31st and gave the public an opportunity to review and comment on the proposed general order. Staff responded to comments received and made revisions to the general order based on comments from the coalition and the public. And finally, staff recommends adoption of the BARD agricultural general waste discharge requirements with the errata. Thank you. And if you have any comments, staff are available to answer.
I just want to make one clarification. The INMP itself is not submitted to the coalition. It's the INMP summary report that's submitted to the coalition.
Hi, Logan. I have a question on your response to comment one.
Okay.
When you talk about an investigation, who's going to do the investigation and what's an estimated cost for it? And if the results show that it is being polluted by outside areas, what do you do then?
Our thinking was that staff would do the investigation. We do have, if it is a groundwater water quality problem, we do have geologists on hand that can investigate that.
I would actually say the dischargers would spearhead the investigation, of course, with guidance and help from regional board staff.
And how long would something like this take?
I think this is all a bit hypothetical because we don't have that issue yet.
Okay.
I don't know if there's, you have any knowledge of Region 5, what they're, they have some extended time frames in Region 5, I know.
Right.
For addressing some of these issues.
So
Logan, or maybe somebody from the coalition can answer this question, but what's the participation in the coalition group? How big of an area is this covered through the order, and who's, are there any known independent?
Okay, so the order will cover 7,120 acres of land. And talked with the coalition, and they estimated about 30 to 40 members. Cheryl, do you know how many members are in the coalition?
What I'm after is what's the percentage of that area is going to be covered and participating in the coalition?
The coalition is going to make a comment in a minute. They might have answers to this.
Whoever wants to make the respond to that, I'm just curious.
Most of the land uses in that area are agriculture. There are other properties that might not be under cultivation. So there's 7,120 acres in the area, but I think with the conditional waiver, I think we had 6,400 acres that were enrolled for the waiver. And in the way that we've redefined irrigated agricultural lands to include commercial irrigated agricultural lands, that might change, and we might be accepting other smaller areas.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll wait for the coalition.
Any other? Well, thank you. Thank you.
I had a couple of questions. On the data that's been previously collected under the waiver, how was that data used in preparation of this order?
Data that was collected by the coalition was used to develop baselines and to identify areas that were of concern. We did find that the concentrations of nitrates in surface waters were elevated in comparison to source waters. And they also collected for some pesticides, glyphosate and pendimethalin. And some of that fed into our decision to take them off of our list of pesticides to monitor for.
How many, maybe this is a question for Paula or Frank, but FTEs, full-time equivalent people, will it take to implement this order?
For staff?
And are we adequately staffed to implement all of these?
I do know that we have one PY or one staff person that's involved in agricultural for working on ag. We also take from the non-point source, and we also take from TMDLs. So I think that we do have staff available for this. For this one, this is definitely, not as expansive, or it doesn't cover as much land or have as many members as the Imperial Valley or the Coachella Valley or the Palo Verde. This is a really smaller area. So, staff will investigate or will work on this to the fullest.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we have public comments now, and I have some speakers' requests from Stephen Alameda. Hello, Stephen. Nice to see you again. Could you state your name, affiliation, to take the oath?
Steve Alameda, farmer in Bard Valley, president of the Bard Water District. I took the oath. Good morning, Madam Chair, board members. Thank you for coming here. Director Rasmussen.
Thanks for meeting us halfway. It saved us a few hours of driving. We appreciate it very much. Addressing your comment as far as the area, and I wasn't going to mention it, but some people are concerned about commingling of waters and maybe something coming in. Basically, the area, commingled waters coming from the reservation ground are basically farmed the same way that we farm the Bard. And it all drains into the same drain, and we don't really anticipate a problem there at this time. Now, maybe in the future, if something comes up and for whatever reason we determine it came from that area, that might be something that would be addressed. But at this point, that really isn't a big concern of ours. I'd like to thank the staff. Logan did a very good job of guiding us through. This is a very, when it comes to agriculture, it's a very sensitive subject for us, and we always place ourselves on a real high pedestal of being stewards of the land and all this type of thing, and providing food and nourishment and all this type of thing. Yet, when it comes to, you know, somebody comes at us or comes to us and says, "Well, now that we've designated you as a polluter and a waste discharger," it takes us a little while to get our arms around that. And we have come to grips with that. And this particular valley doesn't have a huge problem. We have to maintain our records and do it and go forward. But at this point, it does appear to be manageable. And we appreciate the guidance and the patience that staff had with us and our people. And we're going forward with that. We do have one request to change our reporting levels from monthly to quarterly, which we've been doing, and I think we can get. Hopefully, we can come to agreement on that. One other thing I noticed on the, I didn't want the board to think that we were in opposition to testing for glyphosate, pendimethalum, or dimethylate. It's just that through the ag waiver, those things weren't found in the water. We weren't finding that. In fact, at this point, I think we've selected a group of other chemicals that we do. And those things we don't use much anymore. Dimethylate is an old chemical, and it's kind of going away, and it wasn't found in the drain. So we at this point, it's kind of futile to continue those. But we did suggest some other ones that we do use quite a bit to monitor and see if those things start showing up. So anyway, that was a point I wanted to make, that we weren't in opposition to testing for those. It's just that we weren't finding that. With that being said, I think we're going to have one other speaker come up, and it's Charles Sanchez, who we've contracted. He works with the U of A, and he spoke before, and we are going to start working on our coefficients of removal and those types of things. And some of the things we're not necessarily in agreement with, how, you know, the coefficients of removal, and he's done quite extensive research on those things. So I think we have to start meeting those requirements by 2022, and hopefully we've got data and research to back up what we'll be looking at there. So at this point, I'd just like to thank everybody and get on with the next phase of this. So anyway, thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, Charles Sanchez. Hello, Charles.
Hello. Ladies and gentlemen, I took the oath. I am Charles Sanchez. I'm a professor of environmental sciences with the University of Arizona. A couple of, actually three specific points. As Steve mentioned, they've kind of asked me to lead the charge on generating the appropriate crop coefficients for the low desert. Realistically, for all the main acreages, the large acreages like lettuce, broccoli, cauliflower, durum wheat, Sudan grass, we'll have all those on time. But we're a very diverse industry. There's a lot of small acreage crops, dandelions and fennel and Belgium, and there's 80 of these. So we probably will not have all the crop coefficients by 2022.
Some of them may take a couple years longer than that. Now, we're not opposed to using those generated in the Central Coast, but our yields are a little higher, so we'll need other crop coefficients. The other thing we wanted to point out, we're not opposed to monitoring all the drinking water wells in the area. But the one of the requirements is well depth. We will not know the well depth on a large subset of these wells. They're older wells, and that information is not available. But we will test them. We will provide the nitrate and pesticide as called for in the draft order. But a lot of them will not have well depth information because that information doesn't exist. Regarding, we'd like to continue our iteration with the board regarding how we report these small crops. You know, a grower may have 500 acres of head lettuce and 600 acres of broccoli and 300 acres of durum wheat, but he may have only 5 acres of fennel and a whole bunch of these small crops, and we may need some accommodation until we can get that down. And basically, that's all I have to say today. We appreciate the iteration we've had and hope we can reach some mutual agreement on this all.
Hey, Charles, why can't the wells be sounded for depth? Why can't you sound the wells for depth?
Well, they can be. I'm sorry. It can be, but we don't, you know, we have to contract someone to do that. And now, some of that data does exist. A colleague of mine with the U.S. Geological Survey did some of those in the Bard Valley on behalf of the Water Accounting Group in Boulder. So some of them we can fill those gaps, but I don't know to what extent we can. In the longer term, we will have to sound them, as you said, and, right. And on day one of implementation, we may not have that data.
Right.
Because that's a cost, and we got to plan for that cost, and we got to contract someone to do that.
Are they private wells?
Yes.
Can't
we gotta get permission? We got to negotiate permission to do that.
How about Bard Water Company? Can they sound the wells?
To my knowledge, I don't think so. Any other questions?
So, could you give us a very elementary description of how you come about the coefficients?
We have them for the major crops because we collect that kind of data anyway. The state of Arizona has had best management practices mandated on the book since the mid-1990s, and we've been collecting that data. Now, it's a little less intrusive approach. Everyone operates under a general permit. Everybody. You don't have to apply for nothing. You have a general permit. It's more theoretical. Now, you have to apply for a special permit if a problem comes up. And a problem would come up if they find a well that's elevated, and they go to the growers hydrologically linked to that well and find that they haven't been implementing best management practices. Then they'll subpoena the records, and then they'll default to a special permit.
Now, the coefficient, how is it calculated?
Oh, you essentially cut the marketable portion and you process it in a laboratory and you determine the nitrogen in it. And then that's multiplied by the yields that the growers will report to get crop recovery. Does that answer your question?
Basically, but how would you decide what a representative sample of,
you'd have to take enough. You'd have to replicate across space and time.
So,
and it may be different for different times of the year. For example, on the front end, our crops are subjected to more heat stress, so the recovery may be lower than in the midwinter and spring. So there will be a seasonal component to it, and through statistics, we'll try to deal with the spatial and seasonal variation.
So you would need a year, 2 years, 5 years of data? How much?
Probably about 5 to 6 for the small items. The big acreages like broccoli, cauliflower, lettuce, we'd have those in time for 2022. In fact, we have most of them already.
Thank you.
One other point, the draft order calls for training. That's done anyway. Because BART is about less than 10% of the greater Yuma agriculture community, we do it at least twice a year. We do that training. We have special workshops on best management practices. So I guess we would need some guidance how we offer this training that we're doing anyway to meet the criteria of the draft order. Thanks,
Excuse me. Wait, I got another question for you. Where does the Bart Valley get its drinking water from? I noticed in here it said that well water, do not use well water for drinking, and so...
Well, groundwater's a little saline throughout the region, so many people use, have water delivered in large jugs to their residences. Some wells, probably there is a subset that are used for drinking, but overwhelmingly, I'd say 90% of them are not used for drinking.
So it's water that's from bottled water, yeah. so to speak.
Yes.
Okay.
And surface water.
And surface water.
Like, for example, the community of Winter Haven or the city of Yuma, they have a surface water right, and they just treat Colorado River water to make it potable. Colorado River water is much, orders of magnitude less saline than our groundwater.
Wow, really? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else have any questions?
No.
Okay, as far as some of these comments about the monthly or quarterly monitoring, extending time, and well depths, do we need an errata? What's...
Logan, I don't know if you want to address that.
Or is that just something that could be handled during the course of all of this? I'm thinking it is, but just wanted to make sure.
The time extension for submitting the ENOIs was an errata item. I know that Catherine and I had talked about including the extension or the reduction from monthly to quarterly monitoring of field measurements. Nadim and I are open to it. We could include it in an errata, but the executive officer still has the right to modify the monitoring requirements. So we can always do that.
My understanding was staff needed a little more time to evaluate the proposal, but the, like Logan said, they're open to it. And that is something that Paula, as the executive officer, has authority under Water Code 13267 to update the MRP and change those requirements.
Okay. And so all of those comments then basically can be taken care of through the course of all of this, the process of it being implemented. Okay. Thank you. Just wanted to make sure of that. Okay, so anybody else in the public like to make a comment?
I would like to just get to my question. Let me clarify. I understand the size and scope of the what the order covers, the 7,100 acres, but it says in item 10 on page 2, it says, the order only regulates landowners or operators who are members of a coalition group.
Yeah.
In order for it to be covered by this order, the landowner or operators must be members of the coalition group. And what I'm asking is, how much of the 7,100 acres is covered by the order, and therefore the coalition group?
I'm sorry, I should address that. I made a note to address that. I don't want to say it's everybody, because there's some acreage that isn't being farmed, houses and
roughly,
things like that.
Yeah.
90%, 95%.
Okay.
And I think it's 100% of growers are in it. As far as actual land, surface area, there's some land that may not be being farmed or is in housing or something like that. But
I understand that. I just want to know what the participation
is. We've got all the growers.
Okay.
Yeah, we've got the growers.
Great.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So, hearing no other comments or questions, I'll close the public hearing, and I entertain a motion to approve the ag order for Bard Valley with errata.
Would so move with errata.
I'll second. Do we have to put a number in these X's?
I asked that, and Catherine?
We'll fill in the number after you approve the
Okay, so the order. Quadruple X.
Yeah, that's why I didn't mention it. Yeah, I asked that question too, Tom. Anyway, so all in favor. Oh, no, we're going to do a roll call vote, excuse me. So, Hilda, roll call vote, please.
Buford Kreitz.
Aye.
Tom Davis.
Yes.
Ed Music.
Yes.
Jane Powell.
Yes.
Nancy Wright.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for coming out today and for all the work you've all put into this with our staff. After reading this, I know a whole lot more about Bard Valley, and you guys are in a really great spot in California. I know, as far as what I'm seeing in other areas, you do, and you do a great job. You always have, so thank you. So next item on the agenda, items number three, informational update, integrated report. Paula, do you want to say anything about this or no? Okay, so we have our staffer, Rosalind Fleming. Oh, are you? Oh, there's changing.
Good morning, Madam Chair, board members. Today I will be presenting information about the integrated report, which is a report on the health of our surface waters. My name is Rosalind Fleming. I am an engineer for the Colorado River Basin Water Board, and I have taken the oath. I work... I work in the surface water section for the Water Quality Standards Unit. I am responsible for knowing all of the water quality standards, the surface water bodies, and the beneficial uses of those surface waters. I am responsible for determining whether or not those surface water bodies meet the water quality standards. I am basically the water doctor for the regional board, and I specialize in analyzing the health of our surface water bodies. My medical report is known as the integrated report, and it will become apparent a little bit later in my presentation why it is called the integrated report. The purpose of my presentation today is to give you an overview of the integrated report, provide and explain the process, let you know where we are in the process, which is the status, and let you know about the upcoming workshop and board hearing. As the water doctor for our region, I have three main tasks. Number one is to give those water bodies a checkup. Number two, if they are sick, to put them on a 303D list of sick or impaired water bodies. And number three, prescribe something to restore the health of those water bodies. Now, it probably comes as no surprise, just like from time to time, you are required to go to the doctor and get a checkup in order to assess your health. From time to time, we give our water bodies a checkup to assess their health. That checkup is known as a 305B report. It is called a 305B report because it is required by Section 305B of the Clean Water Act. Now, just like when you go to the doctor and get your checkup, you may ask the doc, "Hey doc, how am I doing?" And that is the same question we ask for our water bodies. I will take a look at the water body. I will see how it is doing after its checkup. And if it is sick, it goes on that 303D list of sick or impaired water bodies. And we are required to write a prescription to restore the health of that water body. That report is called a 303D report. It is called a 303D report because it is required by, guess what? Section 303D of the Clean Water Act. Now, the combination of that 305B checkup and 303D list report. I guess I get a little carried away. Now, the combination of that 305B checkup and that 303D list with the prescription to restore the health is known as the integrated report. So now I will walk you through a scenario to give you a better idea of the type of information that is contained in the integrated report. Now, let's say you go to the water to the doctor for a checkup, and in order to better assess your health, he may collect a blood sample and send that blood sample off to the lab. We do the exact same thing for our water bodies. We go out to a water body, and we collect a water sample and send that water sample off to a lab. When the medical doctor gets that lab result back, he or she will compare that lab result to a medical standard to determine if that lab result is exceeding that medical standard. We do the exact same thing for our water bodies. We collect a water sample from the water body, we send it off to the lab, and we compare that lab result to a water quality standard to determine if it is exceeding the water quality standard for that water body. Now, for the medical doctor, let's say for cholesterol, if it is exceeding the medical standard, he may determine that you are sick, you are not doing well, that you need to improve your health. We take a look at our water bodies in the same way. If the water body is exceeding the standard, let's say for a particular pollutant, then we say that that water body is sick and put it on that 303D list of sick or impaired water bodies, and we're required to write a prescription called a TMDL to restore the health. In the case of a medical doctor, he will ask that you not exceed the maximum daily allowance of cholesterol in your body in order for you to remain healthy and benefit from the use of your body to run, jump, and play and live out a happy life. That is the same for our water body. We put our water body on a pollution diet called a pollution control program. That program is known as a total maximum daily load program. It is so called because we state that that water body is not to exceed its maximum daily load of a particular pollutant in order for that water body to remain healthy so that we can benefit from the use of that water body in order to fish or to swim or to drink and so that that water body can live out a healthy life. Now, there is another component to the prescription for health. That pollution control program can be a total maximum daily load, or TMDL, or an alternative. Sort of like if you take a prescription to the pharmacy. You can either get the name brand, the total maximum daily load, or you can get an alternative that will produce the same results. That is what we have done in the Palo Verde Valley for the pesticide pollution control program as part of the general order. So now that we've gone over the integrated report, let's talk a little bit about the process and the status. The process is basically a six-step process as outlined by the State Water Resource Control Board, our parent organization. The first step is a data solicitation process. That is very similar to the doctor requesting or soliciting the information about your health. For example, your lab reports. If the nurse took your vital signs when you came in, your temperature, your blood pressure, your weight, and the doctor may solicit information from you about your health and find out how you've been doing. We do the exact same thing for our water bodies. We solicit all available information for our water bodies. There is a six-month period for everyone to get us all of the information. After that, there's another approximately six-month period in which we organize all of the data and literally take every sample and map it back to a sampling station, and we put them on a map. We make sure that all of our units are consistent, that we have the quality assurance of our data, and that we're comparing apples to apples and oranges to oranges. After that, there is a data analysis period that is about a year. 6 months of that data analysis period is the time that we create evidence for our case, just like a lawyer creates evidence for his case. We create thousands and thousands of lines of evidence from the thousands and thousands of samples and data that has been collected. That is a six-month process, as well as our decisions, which is the case that we make for each pollutant in each water body. That process is also approximately a six-month period. So there is about 2 years in which we collect the data, we organize the data, we create our lines of evidence, and we make decisions. The next 2 years of this four-year process is what I call the approval process. It occurs at three levels. It occurs at the regional board level, it occurs at the state board level, and it occurs at the U.S. EPA level, which is the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. The regional board level and the state board level all involve a public process. The 303D list that is part of the integrated report is all final once we receive US EPA approval. We are currently at the phase between step 3 and step 4. We are converting from the data analysis phase to the public process. We are finalizing the integrated report in order to start our workshop and our public hearing. Our workshop is scheduled for September 2019, and our board member meeting is scheduled for November 2019. And additional information about the date, the location, and the time will soon, if not already, be available on our website at www.waterboards.ca.gov/Colorado River Basin. So in summary, as the water doctor, I basically have three tasks: to give that water body a checkup, if it's sick, put it on the 303D list of sick or impaired water bodies, write a prescription for the restoration of that health of that water body. Those two reports are called the integrated report. Our process is a four-year process. 2 years of the process is data solicitation, organization, and analysis, and the other 2 years of the process is the approval process at the regional board level, the state board level, and the US EPA level. The regional board and state board level both have a public process. The status is finalizing the integrated report, and our upcoming workshop and board meeting will be in September and November, and additional information can be found on our website. Are there any questions?
How many water bodies do we have in our region?
A lot. I mean, there are tables and tables of water bodies in our region. And they're not even all included in our basin plan because so many of them are ephemeral streams and washes. So we haven't even been able to count all of the water bodies because of all of the dry washes.
Are large lakes on golf courses considered water bodies?
That would be considered an inland lake.
It'd be considered what?
It can be considered an inland lake.
So would that be subject to this?
I would say so.
So do we require these private places to submit data so you can check them?
The main reason we would require a private place to submit data is because it would be connected to what we consider a navigable water, because waters of the state include the navigable waters of the U.S. So that is sort of a yes and a no to that question. Would it be considered a navigable water because it's connected to a water of the U.S.?
So the 303D list is, it's concerned with waters of the U.S. And like Rosalind said, they have to have a connection to a navigable water. So.
Okay.
So don't dig that ditch.
I mean, they have a connection from their spigot.
Yeah.
So, I have a question.
Go ahead.
So, this is a four-year process. And
start all over at the end of 4 years, or do you start it every year? See what I'm saying? Is there a concurrent process going on that in 4 years the water body could change? Okay, so how do you account for doing this integrated study and concluded it 4 years, but still maintain constant investigation?
Well, it's exactly what you stated. It's concurrent. That way we don't lose out on any data.
So you start the first year process, and then the following year you start it again?
Well, according to the Clean Water Act, we are required to do it every 2 years. And because it is a four-year process, the State Water Resources Control Board has set up a cycle for the different regions, because it would be difficult to do something that takes 4 years in 2 years. So what they have is on-cycle regions and off-cycle regions. And they will have three regions on cycle at a time. So that's the current plan that they have set up in order for us to meet the requirement of the Clean Water Act. And the solicitation period for data goes from the end of the last cycle to the new cycle.
So I'm still confused. So the data solicitation, that's when you're collecting the data, takes about 6 months. And then you analyze it and organize it and do all this other stuff. And while you're doing that, then does the data solicitation commence again in the next 12-month cycle? So like if you did data from January to June of 2019, then would you do it again in 2020 or 2021?
We do it the next time that we are on cycle. So since we have nine regions and we have three regions on cycle at a time, we have a 2018 cycle, a 2020 cycle, a 2022 cycle, and a 2024 cycle, we would be back on cycle in 2024. So
the data we're analyzing now was collected when?
From the end of the 2012 solicitation cycle up until now, to the cutoff of this six-month cycle.
So 2012 to 2019.
Well, our cycle started, the solicitation letter went out in May 2016, and it cut off 6 months later. So it ended in, actually, I think we went to November 2016 and extended it a little bit. And we gave them 6 months to give us all of the data from the end of the last solicitation cycle.
State your name, please, for the record.
Hi, my name is Nadeem Shukri Ziwar. I'm the supervisor for the Water Quality Standards Unit. And I think what Rosalind was trying to say, that the state divided the regions into three select sections, so to accommodate the US EPA request for submitting the data every 2 years. So they have regional boards on cycle, and then they have regional board off cycle. So for us, for our cycle, we are limited to the period of the solicitation time, which is that six months. Now, when we are done with our cycle, when we are done with our cycle, if there is any more data that comes along for the water body, then we can join other regions for the off cycle, and we can say, well, we have this water body that we have new data about it, and then we want to either list that water body or delist or whatever we want to say. But officially, we can't request or solicit more data until it's again our turn to solicit again in about maybe 4 years or 6 years. The state board has some difficulties.
So the time, tell me the month and year, beginning and end, that the data you're analyzing now was collected.
Yeah, you want to go with that?
Sure. And let me make a quick clarification. We would only analyze data when we are off cycle. If it's some sort of high priority data we feel needs to be analyzed when we are off cycle. Otherwise, we only solicit the data during that 6-month period that I told you about, and we get all of the data from the end of the last solicitation cycle up to the end of the current solicitation cycle.
So what are the dates?
The dates, yes. And that's what I was mentioning to you before. The dates for the solicitation period is May 2016 to November 2016. And all of the data that was solicited during that window is from the end of the 2012 solicitation cycle up until November 2016. And I believe that probably answers your question.
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions of Ross?
Just a quick thank you very much for a presentation that really explains this very well, at least for me. So thank you. And secondly, how many 303D reports have you written?
This will actually be my first one. My background is in groundwater, and I've been working in surface water and specializing in that for the past few years. So it's been a few years working on this, and we are almost at the end.
Thank you. Good report. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so we'll move on. A executive officer's report.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board, members of the public. I'd like to start with an update regarding staffing. We do have a staff member retiring. You, I believe, are familiar with Doug Wiley. He's our unit chief for landfills and waste discharge requirements. His last day is tomorrow, at least in the office. And he wasn't able to be here today, unfortunately, but I do want to acknowledge his many years of service. He's been a state employee for 31 years, and he's been at this board for 18 years. So although we've started recruitment for him, we will be missing his knowledge and expertise in this office. So, and the recruitment has started, so we'll see what happens with that. I'd like to report on the fact that we issued another case closure for an underground storage tank site in Needles. It's an active Texaco gas station. The case was started in our office in 1999, and there was remediation with soil excavation. And since that time, there have been additional groundwater monitoring wells that were installed. And they needed to do additional remediation, which included air sparging, soil vapor extraction, and in situ treatment. So all of these activities were conducted. And this case, as an underground storage tank case, is quite representative of what you will see in some of the remediation sites, where you may have different types of technologies that are needed and long periods of time. So at this point in time, there is no more remediation that's needed, and so we are closing the case. So that adds on to the ones that I reported out on last month. I do want to mention also that the state board is planning on conducting workshops regarding a recently issued executive order that was signed by Governor Newsom. The executive order directs CalEPA, the Natural Resources Agency, and the Department of Food and Agriculture to prepare a water resilience portfolio to meet the water needs through the 21st century. This executive order does require extensive public outreach in advance of developing this portfolio. And because the regional boards have a critical role in managing our water resources, the state board would like to present an information item to this board in upcoming months as part of their public outreach process. The information item will help identify the policy the data and the resource needs for a resilient water future. So the State Board will plan to come down, and at this point in time, we are looking at having this information item in our September board meeting, although the date is tentative. Also, there will be a community meeting next week in Calexico to provide an update to stakeholders on the status of the New River Improvement Project. Staff will be providing a presentation, and Chair Wright will be at that meeting. And this is a significant milestone because it represents a handoff to the City of Calexico for the next phase, which will be the CEQA process for the pipeline and the diversion project. And just to mention, our next board meeting will be on September 19th in Palm Desert, and it will start at 1 o'clock. And this concludes my report.
Thank you. Yeah, the agenda says 9 o'clock, but it's really 1 o'clock. And the next meeting after that is October 10th at 10 a.m. And that's we aren't sure where that's going
to
be.
Yeah, we may move that to Palm Desert, depending on the item.
Board members' comments.
I would just like to say that on October 3rd, Thursday, we're going to have a ribbon cutting for the new sewer facility in Yucca Valley, and you're all welcome to attend. And then I'd just like to thank the City of Raleigh for the use of their facilities today.
You're doing it August. What did you say? What date?
October 3rd.
Do you have a time?
Thursday at 9 o'clock.
Time to be determined. I would assume 9 or 10 o'clock.
Okay. Tom, do you have any comments? Buford? Jane?
Only that we met with the county supervisor yesterday, the chair and I did, and the chair was very kind in pointing out the need for the county to visit with the Salt and Sea Authority, to visit with the Cal EPA and with the federal EPA regarding salt and sea issues.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, we did. Their concern is that what the Riverside County is proposing to do at the north end of the lake, they want to make sure that it's something that's feasible. They don't want to, and Manny or Supervisor Perez wanted to make sure that that what he's telling the people is accurate and whatnot. So they were just kind of asking about the process and what's going, how things work and whatnot. So it was a good meeting. And also Brian Estandi was there also. I don't know, did everybody get the Salt and Sea Authority letter? I wasn't sure who sent it all to. It was Salt and Sea Authority on June 28th wrote a letter to the commissioner of the IBWC, Jane Harkins, in support of the IBWC, basically spending more attention and doing something about the New River at the border. And very, very good letter. If anybody hasn't gotten it, I'm sure we can send it to you. And also, I believe what they're doing is I think they're going around to the cities and water districts in the Coachella Valley asking for similar support letters for that. I thought that was, I was very, very pleased and very surprised that they had done that. And it was a good day. And how they related to the Salt and Sea, for their issues for the Salt and Sea also. Other than that, I don't think I really have anything else. I'd like to thank Paula for your written EO report. I had got a lot of good information in it, and the list here of the mandatory minimum penalties is definitely a good idea.
Hey, Nancy,
yes.
Do they have the dates yet for the WQQC?
They do. Yes, they do.
Hopefully, it's not October 3rd.
No, it's at the end of October. Do you want them, or do you want them now?
No, I was just curious if there was a conflict.
I believe it's more towards the end. I think it's October 30th or something like that. Okay. So it's later on. Okay, well, I think that's all we've got. Mm-hmm. So I will adjourn this meeting. Thank you, everybody.